You're listening to LawPod UK. It's a podcast that discusses developments across all aspects of civil and public law in the United Kingdom. All the comments are current at the time of podcast publication. LawPod UK is produced by the barristers at One Crown Office Row.
I am Emma Louise Fenelon from One Crown Office Row Chambers, and today I'll be talking about trafficking. Human trafficking, or modern slavery, is one of the most appalling forms of criminal activity today. It's also one of the most widespread and fastest growing. The International Labour Organization believes that at any one time, at least 40 million people around the world are being coerced into a situation of exploitation or made to work against their will, often having been transported across borders. Such exploitation can take many different forms, but the most common include forced prostitution, forced labour, or forced marriage. The issue has been in the news often lately, and listeners may have seen the recent BBC drama Doing Money, about a woman snatched from the streets of London by a gang and trafficked to Ireland, where she was forced into prostitution. Here with me to talk about this is Alistair Henderson, also from One Crown Office Row. Alistair, welcome.
Hello, good to be here.
Alistair has a broad-ranging practice focusing on public law, human rights, employment, equality, and medical law. He recently became a commissioner of the Equality and Human Rights Commission. Alistair, what steps has the UK taken to address the issue internationally?
Well, I think to our credit, the UK has actually been at the forefront of international efforts to crack down on human trafficking. We have a good international aid department. They've given more than £150 million of development aid specifically to try and tackle modern slavery. And the British government, not just this government, but the past few governments, have been very vocal in diplomatic efforts and foreign policy about trying to do more to address the problem.
Within the UK, estimates vary hugely as to how many victims of trafficking or modern slavery there are. And this can vary from figures like 13,000 up to 136,000. What is clear is that it is a significant and constantly evolving problem, and one of the major drivers of organised crime. What has the UK done to combat trafficking specifically in the UK?
Well, domestically, there has been new legislation to consolidate the criminal offences for various forms of trafficking or exploitation. So the biggest piece of legislation is the Modern Slavery Act 2015. That applies in England and Wales. There's also equivalent legislation for the devolved administrations. So there's the Human Trafficking and Exploitation Act in Northern Ireland and a similarly named act in Scotland. In addition, in order to implement some of the international obligations we've got, both under the European Convention of Human Rights and under a specific treaty, the Council of Europe has got a treaty called the Convention on Action Against Trafficking in Human Beings. So in order to implement that, the UK has set up something called the National Referral Mechanism, or NRM. And that's the main system we've got to identify victims of trafficking and try and support them.
How does the National Referral Mechanism operate?
Well, anyone suspected of being a victim of trafficking can be referred to the NRM. And that can be by all sorts of different people. So the Home Office, police, a local authority, or a range of recognised charities who have expertise in the area of trafficking, such as Salvation Army or the Medi Trust. The competent authority, so-called, which is basically just one of a group of trained decision makers. They're mainly from the Home Office, but also from some other public authorities. The competent authority then decides whether there are firstly reasonable grounds on the evidence available for believing the person referred might be a victim of trafficking. So that's a sort of initial screen. And if there are reasonable grounds, the person gets a minimum of 45 days recovery and reflection period. They're entitled to secure accommodation. They're given some financial support. And in that time, the competent authority, this decision maker, then does some further investigation and makes a conclusive grounds decision on whether the person is actually a victim of trafficking on the balance of probabilities. Is it more likely than not that they are a victim of trafficking? And if that decision, that conclusive grounds decision, is positive, then the victim of trafficking gets further support and leave to remain in the UK for a longer period.
Sounds like a good system. How is the legislation operating in practice?
Well, it does sound like a good system. Unfortunately, it doesn't seem to be quite working as intended. So there's a number of problems. The first is a problem just across the public sector as a whole, which is a problem of lack of resources and then consequent delays. So in 2017, which is the last year we've got full data for, obviously, there were 5,145 referrals, which, just to pause there, is obviously the tip of the iceberg given the kinds of estimates we think of the number of victims might be out there. But even then, of that 5,145, at the end of the year, only 665 had led to a positive, conclusive grounds decision, and 1,049 a negative decision, which means there was well over 3,273 people were still waiting for an answer. To be fair, the government has tried to tackle the backlog. So a few years ago, 2014, the then Home Secretary, now Prime Minister, Theresa May, reviewed the mechanism, suggested various changes. 2017, just last year, the National Audit Office did a report, and unfortunately that found that the Home Office hadn't implemented the 2014 recommendations quickly enough, and so they suggested another package of reforms. And that is being worked out. So there's an extended period of support supposed to happen now. There's supposed to be up to 6 months of follow-up services for people who are transferring out of the national referral mechanism. And there's now supposed to be a single expert unit to make the decisions that's separate from immigration control. For one of the big problems or concerns was that in practice, the victim of trafficking's immigration decision was still playing a big role in whether or not they were counted as a victim of trafficking. So there's all those kind of issues with resources. But then the second big problem is even if the resources are sorted out, the mechanism isn't necessarily triggered even when it's pretty obvious to anyone who's paying attention that it should be.
Can you give us an example of this?
Well, yeah, there was a rather tragic example that came up in a judgment earlier this year, a case called TDT and the Secretary of State for the Home Department. The Court of Appeal considered a claim on behalf of a young Vietnamese man. He was found in the back of a lorry in Kent on the 8th of September 2015. He was detained pending removal back to Vietnam, and he was seen in the Immigration Removal Centre by a solicitor. She was really concerned. She wrote a pre-action protocol letter to the Home Office saying it looked like he was under 18 and therefore a child, and that he showed all the hallmarks of being a potential victim of trafficking. And the letter proposed, very sensibly, that he be released into safe and secure accommodation provided by the local authority, which had been arranged, pending an age assessment. And the local authority immediately said, yes, we're willing to take him. And the Home Office completely failed to respond. Nothing happened for a couple of months. And so on the 8th of November, judicial review proceedings were issued. But on the same day, the claimant was released from immigration detention, not into secure accommodation or foster care through the local authority, but rather just to an address he'd given in South London. And nobody checked it out. It turned out, in fact, it was just a Buddhist temple address. It wasn't a residential home or anywhere safe. And he just completely disappeared, almost certainly being captured again by his traffickers, which is the pattern with a lot of these Vietnamese immigrants. It was successfully argued in court that he was released without adequate measures to protect him from being re-trafficked. That was a breach of Article 4 of the European Convention of Human Rights, which is the prohibition of slavery. And really, the most striking thing was that, as well as winning that case, the skeleton argument that had been submitted on the claimant's behalf said this isn't a one-off error by the Home Office. And the Court of Appeal commented that they thought this was a sorry story and criticised the Home Office, which obviously happens quite often in sort of reasoned, measured terms, but this was quite blistering. They said the Brooke House staff, that's the Immigration Removal Centre, and the Home Office team appeared to have proceeded with their plan to release the appellant in total disregard of the terms of the pre-action protocol letter, even though they were certainly aware of it and separately aware of the fact his age was disputed. So it's a pretty bad example of someone falling through the cracks.
It sounds like a very sad case indeed. Are there any other difficulties with the operation of the National Referral Mechanism?
Well, even when the NRM decision-making process itself is quite effective, the support provided afterwards can be a bit inconsistent in quality. And the local authorities, who often are bearing the burden of making some of the decisions, can make some mistakes. That was highlighted in a recent case, again from this year, called XPQ and the London Borough of Hammersmith and Fulham. And that was a claim for damages brought by a refugee from Ghana. In that case, the NRM worked quite well. So the competent authority had decided conclusively that she'd been trafficked into forced prostitution. But the defendant local authority, Hammersmith Borough Council, then placed her in accommodation which she shared with five men. And she raised a concern about that and was ignored. And subsequently, she said one of the men sexually harassed her. Now, not only is that horrific in and of itself, but given her background, of course, she was particularly vulnerable and felt particularly scared and traumatised by that experience. And so unsurprisingly, she was awarded compensation And she was ordered under various bases, interestingly, not just the Human Rights Act 1998, but also the Housing Act 1996, some basic common law duties of care. And also there was a discussion in the case, which has sort of left it open a bit, about whether she could have succeeded under the Trafficking Directive as well, that's a piece of EU legislation.
Presumably this system relies to a significant degree on the ability of public authorities to share information.
Absolutely. Sadly, that's an issue generally quite often across public authorities, that there's problems with sharing information, and that's an issue with the national referral mechanism as well. And it's often what can lead to victims of trafficking being lost or re-trafficked, even after they've been identified by the system which is supposed to protect them. So the Evening Standard in London recently ran a story which highlighted an appalling case of a woman with learning difficulties who was rescued from a garden shed in a house in East London, only for Barking and Dagenham Council in that case to then allow her to be handed back to her stepfather, who was suspected of being her trafficker, and she disappeared. The frontline staff who'd found her, so particularly the police officers, were appalled at what had happened, and the local authority is conducting an internal investigation. But that's obviously come far too late for the victim herself. And that's just a particularly tragic example of these failures to pass on the information in time.
So what is to be done to improve the system?
Well, I think we do have to remember that the system has been put in place, and it is a really good step forward that we've got it in the first place. So the UK is committed to stopping human trafficking or modern day slavery. It has made good progress, but there's obviously still some work to be done. Lord McCall in the House of Lords has recently put a private member's bill before Parliament, which aims to improve the help provided for victims of trafficking and better link up the mechanisms of support to deal with these communication problems. It's due its second reading in the House of Commons in late November, so very shortly, and it will hopefully pass into law. But to be honest, ultimately, however good the legal framework is, and it's pretty good already, the real challenge is always going to be implementation. This is a very difficult issue to tackle. It is underground, it's constantly evolving, it's changing its nature all the time. And so if we're to defeat the scourge of human trafficking and modern-day slavery and ensure the UK is a safe haven for victims and a very unsafe place for traffickers, we need firstly more attention to detail and more joined-up thinking from local authorities and police that's been evident in the cases we've just discussed, and also just a better attention to the communication of important information. Given how overstretched our police and council budgets are and how overworked many police officers and social workers are, that's not going to be a small ask. But I do think the stakes are too high for victims of trafficking, and it really should be a higher priority to get this right.
Alistair, thank you for coming on the podcast today.
Thank you very much.
LawPod UK is produced by One Crown Office Row. For more editions of LawPod UK, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and recommend us to a friend.